This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, August 12th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York.
Ray, people will come, Ray.
They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, we'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. Where it is money they have and peace they like.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers. Sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game. And it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
Ray, when the bank opens in the morning, they'll foreclose.
People will come, Ray.
You're broke, Ray. You sell now or you lose everything.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
The Magic Waters, the Field of Dreams game out in Dyersville, Iowa today. The New York Yankees playing the Chicago White Sox. And Taylor, I got to tell you, I am bitter.
Bitter because you're not going to be there?
Well, just think about this, okay? Think about this. They're playing a Major League Baseball game on a farm today, and I'm not a part of it, okay? I heard about this possibility a few years ago. I was excited, and I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe this will be the Sunday night game. Maybe I'll get an opportunity. But no. They're going to be playing a major league game on a farm in Iowa, and I'm not be a part of it. Do you think that Ken Rosenthal knows anything at all about driving a John Deere tractor? Like, what a sideline report I could have done rolling up on a John Deere tractor. Do you think Tom Verducci knows anything about shoveling the manure of 40 cows twice a day? No. Do you think either one of them can speak to knowing that your farm might be foreclosed on in a bankruptcy proceeding? Do you think they know anything about that? Think about the opportunity that's been lost because I'm not doing this game today.
I didn't consider that. And wow, that was a serious case you made. You got really real there with the foreclosure talk too. So I'm bummed for it. I'm surprised you didn't just go to the game. I know tickets are expensive.
I think I won't say anything about, you know, they had a restraining order out on me because I'd been talking about this for a while because they didn't want me like rolling onto the field in a Massey Ferguson or, you know, a John Deere or that sort of thing.
Microphone in hand.
I should be there. And I really hope that they have this game every year because at some point I am going to be there at that game and I'm going to give a sideline report on the perfect conditions for drying hay. Like Rosenthal or Verducci could never do that.
No, it would be. Maybe the high point of your career, perhaps, if you got to do that. I mean, I there's a lot of highlights, I'm sure, but that might be top five at least.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? If I could have rolled into a sideline report on a John Deere, like I would be a hero in the eyes of my nephews. I could tell you that. So
A-Rod going anyway, wild in the booth.
It's going to be I'm bitter this morning. All Chicago right. White Sox yesterday placed pitcher Carlos Rodon on the injured list with a shoulder issue. Tony La Russa told reporters we're hoping it's just a short break and he'll be back sooner rather than later. Look, if you're the White Sox, you're focusing on getting ready for the postseason, getting everybody healthy. There are no plans to shut down Mike Trout, according to Angels general manager Perry Manassian. Trout has not played since May 17th after going on the injured list with a right calf strain. He's had a setback, and he has been out 12 weeks, but they are not saying at this point that he's going to miss the rest of the season. Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, told reporters on Wednesday that Mookie Betts will fly back to Los Angeles to meet with doctors on Thursday to try to figure out what's going on in his hip. He was a late scratch from the lineup in Tuesday's game against the Phillies. He's batting .277 this year with 17 homers. During the Phillies-Dodger game on Wednesday night, All-Star catcher JT Realmuto left in the first inning after he took a foul tip to his mask. He finished that half inning defensively, but then he was pinch hit for in the bottom of the first. As that game played out, Cody Bellinger, who obviously now becomes an especially important figure for the Dodgers with Mookie Betts being out, well, he had himself a day.
Bellinger hits this one deep to left field, and that was a heck of an at-bat for Bellinger. He ends it with a home run to left, his eighth of the season, and after 13 pitches, he puts the Dodgers up 2-0.
And the Dodgers would go on and win 9-2 over the first place Phillies. The Mets and Nationals finished their suspended game from the day before. And Brandon Drury, who's been tremendous for the Mets this year as a pinch hitter, came through again.
3-2 pitch. Drury, it's a broken bat floater up the middle, a base hit into center field over the leaping second baseman Garcia. VR comes home and Brandon Drury comes through again. The Mets have taken the lead. It is 8-7 here in the bottom of the eighth. And Brandon Drury has been a pinch-hit superstar for this team.
That sound from WCBS, the second game, or I guess the regularly scheduled game on Wednesday, was rained out. They will play a doubleheader today in Washington. The Braves face the Cincinnati Reds. Joey Votto had himself a day. Top of the ninth inning, this was Votto with the Reds down 2 runs.
Here's the first pitch to Votto. He swings, sends a high fly ball, deep right field, way back, and gone! Joey Votto has tied the game with a 2-run blast to right. His second home run of the night. It's his fourth hit.
That from 700 WLW. But in the end, the Braves would have the last laugh.
Swung on and smashed. This one is punished. Way back to the chop house. That is gone! What a moment of heroism for Ozzie Albies. The Braves score 3 times in the bottom of the 11th, come back and win it, and this team stays smoking hot.
Yeah, that from 680 The Fan. When that home run was hit, I got a text message from my 17-year-old son, who is a huge Braves fan. He's really excited about how well the Braves are playing. He's really excited about the fact that they activated Travis d'Arnaud off the injured list before yesterday's game. At the end of the day, the Phillies a game lead over the Braves and over the Mets. The Toronto Blue Jays are rolling. The Toronto Blue Jays are rolling. They blew out the Angels on Wednesday night with help from Teoscar Hernandez.
Curveball hit high and deep, out to left field. That's a no-doubter. Teoscar Hernandez connects with a grand slam. Teoscar has teed off an absolute moonshot. Home run number 18.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Athletics, the Indians, and Jed Lowry came through in the top of the eighth inning.
Here's the 2-1 to Lowry. Swung on, hit to right field, hit deep, way back. Zimmer at the track. He'll turn and watch it fly. A tremendous shot to right field by Lowry, and the A's have turned this game around. It's 6-3 Athletics in the top of the eighth.
That from A's Cast. So Oakland wins that game 6-3. They've won 6 straight games, the longest current streak in Major League Baseball. The Athletics, 2 games behind the Astros in the American League West. They're a game ahead of Boston, 3 ahead of the Yankees, 3.5 ahead of Toronto for the lead in the race for the #1 wild card. Tigers, Orioles, and an all-time great player moved within 1 big hit of a milestone.
The 1-2, swinging a high fly ball left field. Going back is Hayes at the fence, jumping up, gone! 499 Miguel Cabrera. Listen to these Orioles fans. They know they're watching history.
That's right. Dan Dickerson, 97.1, the ticket. Miguel Cabrera, just one home run away from 500. This is someone who, at the end of May, was batting 184. And I'm sure there are a lot of people wondering if he was ever going to bounce back. He has. Since June 1st, he's batting 307.
Buster, before we move on here, you can listen to that Field of Dreams game you were talking about on ESPN Radio. Tune in at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time for that. Maybe some tracker updates, probably not. Also, for ESPN Plus offerings, you can watch Abby's Places. Don't miss it. Superstar Abby Wambach takes you across the country to get the heart of soccer history and its cultural impact. Abby's Places is now streaming only on ESPN Plus. And if you're looking for some UFC talk, check out DC and RC, new episodes every Wednesday and Thursday, featuring UFC legend Daniel Cormier and Super Bowl champion Ryan Clark, both Louisiana natives, as they hang out and kick around the hottest topics from across the world of MMA and preview and review the most important fight cards and storylines. You can listen to DC and RC wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter and producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay, although I feel like that the conversation we're going to have about Miguel Cabrera absolutely mirrors what we've been saying about Albert Pujols the last 3 or 4 years, right? Where it's almost like that younger fans don't understand how great Miguel Cabrera was earlier in his career. And now as he's hitting all these milestones, I think in part because he's had this erosion in recent seasons, that it's important to talk about that again, like just how great he was.
Definitely. It feels like a lot of these accumulation stats, you know, which I don't mean in a bad way, but that's what they are. We're talking about 500 home runs, 3,000 hits. Just by the way math works, you get there towards the end of your career. And we've seen some guys getting there in recent years, as, you know, with Pujols and now with Miggy approaching those, where they're not where they once were. And I totally agree. I feel like we need to remind people that Miguel Cabrera is not that last few years on the reference page, but what he was at the beginning of his career, being a young player playing in the World Series. He has all of these records for youngest to do a bunch of different things back in 2003. And now he is, you know, here getting to the finish line.
Yeah. So Miguel Cabrera, when he was promoted to the big leagues in 2003 by the Marlins, he was, you know, one of the best young hitting prospects in the game. You know, he was Juan Soto at that time. And Sarah, I know you know this because you love baseball history. He was phenomenal, you know, played an important role as the Marlins fought their way into the postseason and all the way to the World Series. And then he had an at-bat, and I remember I actually wrote a piece for ESPN, the magazine, about this at the time. He had an at-bat in the World Series against Roger Clemens, which was like his announcement that I'm here in the big leagues and I'm going to do a lot of damage. Roger, and I had seen him do this because I covered him as a pitcher for 3 years. He tried to intimidate Miguel Cabrera in his first plate appearance. He threw a ball about head high. I'm not going to say it was close to Miggy's head, but it was close enough where Miggy, after the pitch was thrown, like he turned around and looked at the mound because he was mad, because he understood what the intent was. And then as that plate appearance goes on, you know, he fouled off some pitches and you could see him, Miggy, kind of working his way back into the bat after being so angry. And then Roger threw a pitch on the outer half of the plate and Miguel Cabrera takes him deep to the opposite field in the old Marlins Park. And to for a right-handed hitter to hit that home run, and for it to be a 20-year-old rookie against a guy, you know, at Hall of Fame type numbers, one of the greatest pitchers of all time in Roger Clemens. I got to say, if I were to draw up a list of the 10 most impressive at-bats that I've ever seen, that might be number one, Sarah. Like that right there encapsulated so much that, you know, would be great about Miguel Cabrera in the years that followed.
Absolutely. I mean, that's who he was so early in his career. And to your point, that made him the second youngest player ever to homer in a World Series game. He was 20 years and 187 days old when he hit that home run. The only guy younger to hit a home run in the World Series was Andrew Jones in 1996 when he was 19. And then, of course, our next youngest World Series home run is Mickey Mantle. And then we get to Juan Soto. And that's who Miguel Cabrera was. And I love that you said he was Juan Soto before Juan Soto, because I think that's the player that a lot of current fans and younger fans think of for youngest, best teenager, all of these other types of things. Miguel Cabrera was 20, but he was so close to those ages. So I just love that comparison. But I've been thinking about this a lot lately because it makes me a little bit sad that in order to get to 3,000 hits, you're probably going to be towards the end of your career and not at your peak. I mean, that's just how the math works. But if you look at guys to have 3,000 hits and 500 career home runs, which he's really, really close to, there's only six guys who've done that. He's going to be the seventh, and it's Albert Pujols, who we've mentioned, Alex Rodriguez, Rafael Palmeiro, Eddie Murray, Henry Aaron, and Willie Mays. I mean, that is an incredible list that he's going to be joining. And I think a lot of people look at what he's done, especially in the last 2 years, and can't necessarily process him being on that list. But if you look at first 10 years of career, which I think a lot of people talk about with Albert Pujols as well, I mean, those are some of the absolute best starts to a career that we've ever seen.
One of the coolest things, Sarah, that I ever witnessed, I always loved to stand next to the batting cage and eavesdrop, but that first spring after the Tigers added Prince Fielder as a free agent, this is before Prince got hurt. He was healthy, and it was the first day where they took batting practice together, these two guys. And here's Prince Fielder, who, you know, wildly accomplished that point. He'd hit a ton of home runs. He'd been around baseball his whole life because his dad had played in the major leagues. And so I'm standing next to the cage, and, you know, Prince is hitting balls over the right field fence as a left-handed hitter. And then Miggy just starts carving line drive after line drive after line drive over the fence in right center field. You know, and Miggy, he's hit a lot of home runs in his career, but I think you would agree with me, like, his strength was always opposite field, taking it the other way, being a technician, kind of a right-handed Freddie Freeman. And after Miggy had a couple of rounds of batting practice, Prince Fielder looked at him and said, "How do you do what you do?" Like, the idea that Prince Fielder is wowed by Miguel Cabrera, you know, told me a lot about just how unusual Cabrera was, you know, at that time, and how great he had been as a hitter. We'll see what he does and how long it takes him to get to 3,000 hits. But you're right, he's going to finish his career at the leaderboard. He should absolutely be unanimous selection in his first year of eligibility for the Hall of Fame. Two other old guys in baseball had good moments last night. Joey Votto, Adam Wainwright. What do you got?
So these were some really fun games. I mean, I know the Reds went on to lose, but Joey Votto has the most home runs of anybody since the All-Star break. I saw a great note that he entered the All-Star break tied for 43rd in the National League in home runs. He's now tied for second in the National League in home runs. Only Fernando Tatis Jr. has more. And he had two home runs last night. And I was just sitting there and I thought, you know, multi-homer game, we know he's getting up there in age. Only two Reds players older than Joey Votto have had a multi-home run game. So he's 37 years, 335 days old. The only Reds players with a multi-homer game at an older age were Ken Griffey in 1989 when he was 39 and Bob Thurman in 1956 when he was also 39. So this is what Joey Votto is doing. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about some awards, and I don't think he's going to win the NL MVP, but I think he's going to get some consideration with how the Reds have come on recently and what he's been doing in the second half.
All right, you, as someone who grew up outside of New York City, what are you looking forward to for the Field of Dreams game? Because it's already been established in the podcast. What I'm really looking forward to are the tractors and the agriculture report.
Oh my gosh. I mean, just every picture I've seen, it just looks beautiful. I mean, it just looks incredible. It's such an amazing visual experience. And I keep looking at these videos, you know, wishing I was there, of course. I mean, we all do. I any baseball game, I wish I was there. But, you know, I'm really excited for the unique setting. And I know they had a youth game yesterday and there was a grand slam that was hit into the corn. So definitely interested to see what Aaron Judge, Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, you name it, can do in terms of reaching that. Because I feel like that kind of has to be the goal, almost like one of those hit it here kind of signs. But you know, I'm excited for that and just excited to hear stories. I'm sure we'll see pictures, videos of players going to try do the maze, all of that other stuff. You know, it's always fun to see them kind of out of their element but in a really cool setting like that.
I'm saying this a little bit tongue-in-cheek but a little bit not. I think it's a big miss that they put a fence in there. Like I would have loved to have seen if it was like the movie and there'd be no outfield fence and they potentially, if you hit it into the corn on the ground, then it's a ground rule double. If you hit it on the fly, then it's a home run. And you can imagine there'd be some controversy. The Yankees would or wouldn't make the playoffs based on something like that. I think that would have been cool.
Of course, you know, it's so funny. I've been talking about that the last few days and we're saying, you know, why is there a fence? So of course we understand why there is, but it would have been really fun. And of course, early baseball, I mean, there were no fences. So, you know, that would have been a little historically accurate, but I understand why in 2021 we need one, but it would have been really, really funny to see the scrambling that might have ensued from some really long fly ball or something like that.
Taylor and Nathan, jump in. Taylor, you first. Tell me if you kind of agree with me. You wish that there had been no fence out in the outfield, that it would just been the cornfield.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That would have been phenomenal. A lot of I could have seen a lot of like arguments along the edge of the cornfield, though, if there was actually a home run, the ball made it out, which actually would have made it more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Malibu, I know you probably haven't spent much time in cornfields. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. No offense, would have been awesome. Seeing Aaron Judge ripping through the corn trying to find the ball, that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well. They missed so many opportunities. Having me do the sideline reporting, no offense, the cornfield, but whatever. It'll be fun to watch tonight. All right, Sarah. So I want to go through the major awards that we have, MVP, Cy Young Awards, Rookie of the Year, and just get updates from you on where you think those races stand. We'll start in the National League for MVP. Because, I mean, just start with this. Shohei Ohtani, clearly the front runner for American League MVP.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is having an amazing season. He's just having it in the wrong year, you know. So hopefully he does it next year and he wins it then. But definitely Ohtani right now.
National League MVP, what do you see?
So I do think this depends a lot on exactly what Fernando Tatis Jr. is like when he comes back. Is he playing in the outfield? Is he playing shortstop? We don't know definitively what's going to happen and what level he'll be at. I think if he continues playing offensively at the level he was at when he got hurt, it's probably him, assuming that the Padres are going to make the playoffs here and he's going to be a big part of that team making it. But, you know, there are some fun arguments out there for guys like Willie Adames, who has been huge for the Brewers and a big part of why they are where they are, aside from that pitching. I mentioned Joey Votto earlier. Again, I don't expect these guys to win, but I think it's a really interesting conversation. He's been incredible in the second half. This is kind of what he does. I think that someone like Brandon Crawford or Buster Posey needs to be considered given the season the Giants are having, even though their strength has kind of been that everybody is good, even if no one is necessarily a superstar. And then I think Trey Turner is a fascinating conversation because he's played for two teams. We've never seen someone win an MVP when they've played for two teams, but he's second in the National League in WAR. If you look at Fangraphs, he was already really good with the Nationals. He's been just as good with the Dodgers now. If they, you know, come back and win this division, I wonder if there's an argument for him.
And I kind of wonder, I'm trying to go quickly and through Baseball Reference and put these numbers in front of you. I'll just raise the premise first. I kind of wonder the way the National League East is playing out, if Freddie Freeman is a really, really interesting candidate, because if the Braves wind up storming their way into the playoffs, win the National League East after his really slow start, if you know, he could be someone who could surprise us given how much he was struggling early in the year.
Definitely. And that also reminds me that I forgot to say Bryce Harper, who I think is a very serious candidate, especially if the Phillies do win the division there. So I totally agree. I mean, in general, you know, we know and everyone has different opinions on whether it matters if you make the playoffs, all of these other things. But when I'm looking at MVP candidates, I'm certainly going to look at the teams that are in contention there and, okay, who's carrying this team? And I do think that if the Braves were to orchestrate that turnaround, that's a really good argument for Freeman. And I do think Harper's probably the number two candidate right now if the Phillies do win that division, ahead of my sort of Trey Turner conundrum.
Freddie Freeman, his last 83 games, hitting .323 with a .411 on base percentage. After through May 6, he had a batting average of .195. You know, a lot of times we'll hear from teams about somebody who's not performing up to expectations. Well, he's hit into a lot of bad luck. This seems to be a case where, you know what? That was absolutely legitimate. All right, Cy Young Awards, National League, American League.
So in the National League, I mean, this is amazing. I wish we could give out about six of these because the National League pitching has just been insane. But I think I have Zach Wheeler in the lead right now. I mean, maybe that's partially just because of that outstanding performance he had on Sunday, retiring 22 in a row after he gave up the leadoff hit, all of that. But I think he's had an outstanding season. I was campaigning for him, writing a story about him a couple of weeks ago, and he has so far backed that up for sure. Walker Buehler having an amazing season. Corbin Burnes, we saw last night. He has a bunch of different records he's already tied this year with the consecutive strikeouts without a walk. And of course, the 10 straight strikeouts last night. But then again, you can put like pretty much the entire Brewers pitching staff on this list. You know, Brandon Woodruff's going to get a lot of votes. Freddie Peralta is going to get a lot of votes. And then Kevin Gausman had a bit of a bump in the road, a couple weeks ago with, you know, two or three straight starts, but he's sort of figured that out. So I think he's up there as well.
And the American League.
This is interesting because if you asked me before about noon yesterday, I think I would have said Carlos Rodon, even though I don't think he's going to be a qualified pitcher. For those who don't know, qualified means you have to have one inning per team game. Rodon has been right below the qualification mark pretty much all season because he had some five inning starts, but he threw a no hitter. He's been really, really good. And I think the qualified is maybe a little bit out of tune for 2021 anyway. So I think my pick would have been him. Now that he's hurt and it sounds like he may not be back after the 10 days, I think it's his teammate Lance Lynn. But Gerrit Cole definitely has to have some consideration. Of course, he's also missed some time. You know, it's an interesting conversation there, but I think it's one of those White Sox pitchers.
And we got about a minute left. Rookies of the year in the two leagues.
So in the American League, I was going to say Eric Hosse because I do think that he's had a great year, you know, many fewer games than Adolis Garcia, but he came on pretty strong in that second half when the Tigers were playing well. But Garcia homered again last night. I think it's probably him. You know, Randy Rosarena, who everyone was picking, is also having a good year, but I think Garcia with the home runs probably comes up ahead there. And the National League, I think it's Jonathan India, and I think that's pretty much just a slam dunk at this point.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Do you like when I talked to Nick Kroll last week, GM of the Reds? I told him, I said, just watching him play, he reminds me of Chase Utley. Like, I just think Chase Utley whenever I see him play.
Yeah, I mean, the hair certainly helps there, you know, but I think the play as well. But I think that there's like a finesse or something that I see very similar in their games.
All right, Sarah. Good to talk with you. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, we've got the Field of Dreams games tonight. I say, kidding a little bit, but sort of not kidding also, I feel like Major League Baseball kind of missed a cool opportunity by actually having a fence for tonight's game. I wish they had just used the cornfield as the outfield line, as you see in the movie. What do you think?
Buster, I've been looking at pictures of what this field looks like, and I can't help but think the same thing. And then I think to myself, boy, imagine the negotiations with the Players Association over issues like this, because I'm remembering several years ago when the Cubs wore a bunch of different uniforms and, you know, throwback jerseys in celebration of the 100th anniversary of Wrigley Field. And I remember this discussion about zippers on the uniforms and what might happen if a player slid and a metal zipper cut into someone. So the minutiae of that, as opposed to just tumbling into a cornfield, I'm with you though. I would love the optics of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. If a player got hurt in that game because of a corn stalk, like Jason Stark, my old friend, who likes to write about unusual injuries. I mean, that would have been his column, would have been written for the year. Right.
Well, it looks like there's like a chain link fence, like a rubberized chain link fence. Am I right about that?
Whatever it is, it's not like the movie. That's not going to say.
Well, you know, there will be no dead ball players coming in from the corn so far as we know. But, you know, I know they have big things planned and the uniforms are going to look nice. So, yeah. I'm disappointed but we'll have other things to look to.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about this week's forgotten franchise before we get to the quiz.
Buster, the St. Louis Browns joined the American League in 1902 after playing one season in Milwaukee as the Brewers. They moved to Baltimore in 1954, where they play today as the Orioles. In between, the Browns played 52 seasons and enjoyed a winning record in only, are you ready for this, 11 of those 52 seasons. They played in one World Series, 1944, when MLB's talent pool was decimated by World War II, and they lost to their hometown rivals, the St. Louis Cardinals, in six games, all of which were played in the same ballpark. The next time that occurred was 2020, last year, when the Fall Classic was contested entirely at neutral site Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. A little-remembered tidbit, Buster. The Browns planned to move to Los Angeles after the 1941 season.
Wow.
They lined up league approval, a plan for cross-country travel, a schedule, and a ballpark to host their home games. American League owners were slated to approve the move at a meeting on December 8th, 1941, but fate intervened when Japan attacked U.S. forces at Pearl Harbor the day prior to the vote, catapulting the United States into World War II. The Browns are probably best remembered now for their signature franchise oddities. Pete Gray, a one-armed outfielder, played for the club in 1945. 3'7" Eddie Gaedel was brought in to pinch hit for the Browns in 1951. One of owner Bill Veeck's legendary publicity stunts that included a promotion where Browns fans were allowed to vote on in-game strategy. The club struggled to draw fans throughout their history with an average game attendance of less than 4,000 fans over the span of their 52 seasons in St. Louis. The Brownies, however, did see several Hall of Famers suit up for the club, including George Sisler, Rogers Hornsby, and the great Satchel Paige. The last St. Louis Brown to play in the majors was Don Larson, who retired in 1967. almost 7 decades removed from their final game, St. Louis's other MLB team, the Browns, are this week's forgotten franchise.
Man, I love this you know, this presentation that you did on the Browns. Pete Gray was always someone who fascinated me. I can't remember what the name of the book was, but you know, those books you read that when you're 8 to 11 years old on baseball. And I think it was Strange But True Baseball Stories. And one of those was Pete Gray. And as you said, he was a one-arm player, played for the Browns in 1945, 77 games. He hit .218, .259 on base percentage. And at that time, of course, part of the thinking was you had a lot of veterans coming back from the war, you know, having suffered these horrible injuries, and that Pete Gray would be someone who potentially could inspire. He lost an arm in a childhood accident. To hear the stories of how he would, you know, flip the ball to himself and then throw it back into the infield, really cool.
Yeah, amazing. I remember my father telling me stories about Pete Gray. And my father was born in 1936. So he would have been at an age where he would have been aware of that at the time. And I remember as a kid thinking to myself, that's impossible. But yeah, very St. Louis Brownsian, to coin a word, all things considered, a weird franchise. And one of my favorite ever throwback logos, Buster, the Browns, the last couple of years, they wore a sleeve patch of an elf, a brownie on their uniforms, Louis the Elf, with little dealy boppers sticking up. Very, very weird team.
Yeah, and Bill Veeck, of course, behind a lot of that, you know, and with his great mind for promotion, and he certainly brought that when he moved over the Browns. All right, let's get to this week's quiz, which I'm bound to win.
Ooh, ooh, gauntlet thrown. All right, here we go. This was the very last sausage race winner at Milwaukee's County Stadium in the year 2000. Was it A, bratwurst, B, Italian, C, Polish, or D, chorizo? The last sausage race winner at Old County Stadium in Milwaukee in the year 2000. Bratwurst, Italian, Polish, or chorizo?
You know, before you answer this, well, never mind. I'm not going to give you the background. Why should I give you some advantage with some information that might be useful to you? Right. I'm going to cover my mouth while I talk. So you can't, you can't know what I know. Tell me what your answer is.
Oh, man. I want to say chorizo just because it's fun. But I feel like last sausage race, bratwurst has to be the winner, right?
Okay, I don't know the answer, but what I do know is what the information, the scouting report I got from Tim Kirchin when he participated in this, and what he was surprised by was how seriously the participants took this, because apparently, if you participate, you know, they get club employees will serve as the four participants in the race.
Tubed me.
And the word is that if you win the race, then you don't have to work the rest of the night. So everyone took this very seriously. And you're right. A lot of these, let's face it, they're scripted, and you know who's going to win ahead of time. And it does make sense that bratwurst would be the winner. But knowing, using the inside information that I got from Tim Kirchin, I am going to say chorizo.
Insider information fails because Buster, chorizo was introduced in 2006, so you don't know squat. But Taylor is correct. It was bratwurst. Yeah.
You know.
Nicely done, Taylor.
A tubed meat question straight up my alley here, so I'm glad I could deliver on that one.
Whoa, it's perfect.
It's just a bad day. I'm not at the Field of Dreams game. Tim Kirchin completely failed me, whatever he told me. I should have just gone with the whole scripted thing. What a horrible day this has been. Todd, thanks for ruining it.
Oh, you're very welcome, Buster. And if you brought worse, they will come.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday. Let's go to Ian at IFP58. Ian writes in, you've barely mentioned the Rays this week, even though they have now opened up a 5-game lead. They have the best record in the AL and the best bullpen ERA. Please give credit. That lead is probably down to 4 games after their blowout against the Red Sox last night, but the point still stands from Ian.
Yeah, well, we had the Rays and Red Sox in Sunday Night Baseball on August 2nd. We ran an interview with Kevin Cash the next day. We talked a lot about the Rays overtaking the Red Sox. Would you back me up on all that, Taylor, please?
Yeah. We talked plenty of Rays. Is that that's another team. The Rays, the Orioles, the Mets, teams Buster hates for sure. Oh, man. Let's go to IJB. It's Just Baseball 1. IJB writes in, do the Brewers, having three great Cy Young candidates, Burns, Peralta, Woodruff, hurt their chances for any single one of them to win over someone like Zach Wheeler?
I don't think the fact that they've got three great guys necessarily hurts, but maybe the way that the pitchers are being deployed could hurt them, especially as we go down the stretch. Because let's face it, if you're the Brewers, you get a big lead in the National Central. They'll start to pull the reins back on those guys, protect them for the postseason. And Zach Wheeler, on the other hand, the Phillies are going to run him out there as often as they can. And here's the thing, is that all year, the Brewers have done a phenomenal job, and I think it's really contributed to how well those guys are playing in terms of managing their innings, you know, backing off those guys, throwing them every six games. I think, if I remember correctly, Woodruff has one start on fewer than 5 days rest. But when it comes to a Cy Young candidacy, let's face it, that's going to hurt them. You know, as we're sitting here at this moment, I was looking at this. Zach Wheeler this year has thrown 156 innings. Woodruff, about 20 fewer innings. You know, some of the other Brewers guys here, they're like 30 fewer innings than Wheeler. And I think that in the end is going to make a difference.
Let's go to Brian at BryBaker23. Brian writes in, the Yankees have had an extended COVID outbreak in their clubhouse, yet day after day, I look in the dugout and I don't see players wearing masks, social distancing, or limiting contact. As a business, why aren't they taking action to protect their product? This has to do with like the new set of rules around COVID, right?
Well, yeah. And I would say this, just walk down any street in America and you'll probably see similar things. Right. Like we have that quandary just about everywhere. I suspect that the part of the reason why, and all kidding aside, that the Yankees are doing this, and continuing is because most of their players are vaccinated. So there's a belief that, you know what, we'll be okay. I do wonder as we get closer to the postseason, if they will begin on their own to, invoke some of their own protocol, or maybe Major League Baseball will do that because you don't want the postseason to be, in jeopardy at all.
Yeah, I could see them maybe like tightening their bubble or whatever, kind of what they did last year. Let's go to Reggie Deal at Baseball Deal RE. Reggie writes in, Buster, I'm not at all a Red Sox fan. I'm enjoying their current situation, but given how the team did not even try to upgrade a relief corps that keeps throwing games away like English tea into the Boston Harbor, won't there have to be a price paid by the GM?
I think we've already seen it to some degree in Boston. I think the folks in the market are putting the collapse in part on Chaim Bloom, head of baseball operations, because they didn't do much. We talked ad nauseum on the podcast about how I still don't understand why they didn't get Anthony Rizzo. And you're right. They also needed pitching.
Gosh, we never talk Red Sox on here. We gotta put those plucky upstarts in the rundown. Let's go to John Shepard to close out Bleacher Tweets at John_E_Shepard. John writes in, hey, Buster, have you heard anything on Freddie Freeman's contract? Surely even the notoriously frugal Liberty Media wouldn't let a superstar who wants to stay in Atlanta walk.
I think that what's happening is that the Braves, like a lot of teams, want to see what the new rules will be under the collective bargaining agreement before they work out a deal. I do think in the end that Freddie Freeman is worth more to the Braves than any other franchise. I think like Chipper Jones, he'll finish his career there. I think the Braves, maybe even Freddie's representation want full context on what exactly the financial landscape is going to look like before they work out a deal. But I do think in the end, and look, the fact that they got Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies under these incredibly team-friendly contracts should give the Braves the flexibility to pay Freddie whatever middle ground they find.
Frederick! All right, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It would be much appreciated, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, Todd, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day. Today, I'll be watching the Field of Dreams game wearing overalls and my barn boots.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.